It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. Good to see my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Good to see you, Sean.
And lots to talk about on today's show is, do you hunt or fish a gator?
Well, you do both.
But in Alabama, it's funny. Like,
you do it both.
You hunt them. Yeah. You know, it's the term they use. We're going to get into that in a second. But then you go like Louisiana, they fish a gator.
Yeah.
That's the term they use. They fish a gator there. So we'll get into that as gator season registration is open now through the state. We've got to talk about some of those details. Also, some offshore reports, and you've been out there. Is the sargassum like what we expected, like everywhere?
There's a lot of grass out there, yes. More than usual, let me say that. More than usual. Lot of grass.
So, talk a little bit about that. Also, very popular show from last week, Craig Newton with Alabama Marine Resources, the reef guy, the guy in charge of the reefs, inshore, offshore, nearshore for Alabama.
Great show last week.
I had somebody come up to me. I was on a we went on a canoe trip. Went on a canoe trip with, and big shout out to Bob Andrews, Sunshine Canoe Rentals, a great guy. We went on a canoe trip on Sunday with the family and some friends, and the conversation on one of the sandbars, because you know you canoe for, you're probably supposed to canoe for 30 minutes or an hour and then hit a sandbar. We do about 15 minutes, hit another sandbar, hang out, and kids play. And the conversation came up. They said, "You were listening to the show yesterday. Is his job that he gets to just like test out what kind of reef designs work best for Alabama?" I said, "He's got a lot of other things, but yeah, that's part of it." We're like, "That's a cool job."
That would be a good job.
Because he was talking about some of the
reefs. A lot of science behind it.
Yeah, and talking about some of the reefs, obviously better for amberjack, some are better for snapper, some are better for mangrove snapper than red snapper.
Yep.
And they do these different designs. I mean, that's a job. You ever do that and go, "I didn't know that job was available when I was a kid"?
Yeah.
You know, like what I mean, there's like all these jobs you find out about. You're like, how did y'all find out about that job? Nobody told me when.
Well, back then when you were a kid, that wasn't a job.
Right. There wasn't, you know.
But there wasn't that.
Like, but there are people in these cool jobs in the outdoors, you know, that you're like, well, that wasn't a thing. It's really cool. And it's obviously been very successful for our state. The amount, just the footprint of pyramids and chicken coops and tanks and ships and, you know, rock and everything off our coast, and how they decide what areas it's going to go in, how they do the permitting and all that. And it may be with seasons, even though we got cut in half in our tonnage, but having that state management, having seasons that last more than a few days, more people are getting back into dumping their own.
That's the great thing. Mm-hmm. That's the good news.
Because in the 6-day season, nobody was going to do that.
That's right. I mean, in the last several years, people are back putting their own spots out there because it's worth it. You know, you could go fish all year last year. It's no problem. This year, hopefully we're going to get to at least fish to the rodeo.
We had that conversation with Dr. Sean Powers and Scott Bannon, and they both said, you know, that they feel at least red snapper through the rodeo.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And that just gets people fired up. You know, if they can go fish quite a bit, they'll go spend the money to put a reef out. To put a reef out, I think, is anywhere from about $1,500 to $2,000 per reef.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're only going to get to go fish two or three times a year, is it worth it?
Well, and and when the seasons were so short, the public stuff was so unpressured that you had no reason to do it.
That's
anyway.
Right.
You just fish the public stuff.
That's right. You go to public stuff and catch all you want to catch.
Yeah.
There's no reason for people to put reefs out.
But now we're back to that. And if you go back, if you didn't hear the last week's show, you can go back. I mean, we get Craig on the spot on if you had to dump one kind of reef for this, he'll tell you what the most productive for this is, what the most productive for that is. I mean, they've done the science at the state. And it's a different game, too. Do you want a reef that produces more fish but doesn't last over a decade versus one that may not be as still good but might last you a lifetime? You know, how do you play that game? Well, go back and listen to that show if you didn't check it out. Remember, you can get all our podcasts going straight through the website. You can go through the FM Talk 106.5 app or any of the podcast platforms out there you might already subscribe to. Just look for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and you'll find Mike and I there talking to you from somewhere in the internet.
Yeah.
some out there in the internet, just like this show later today, will go up on the web so you can check it out. Plus, it replays through the weekend. All right, so just some notes, some things I'm getting through too. So, do I want to call out my brother? I probably don't. I would not say that my brother. Okay, so I just did. They were talking about a trip they had for opening weekend of snapper season, right? And fishing out of South Baldwin.
Yeah.
And talking about the trip, and he and I were hanging out, and he said, yeah, you know, and then we caught some really nice triggers, and we had to let them go. And I said, no, you didn't. He said, no, they weren't in right then. I said, yeah, they were. And then we got in discussion, and he said, yeah, and we, you know, the groupers, we, you know, the next weekend we caught some groupers, we had to let those go. And I said, what kind? I think it was black grouper or whatever. I said, you didn't have to let them go. I mean, I didn't know what the length, you know, was, but I said they were in season.
Yeah.
And it got me realizing something you and I haven't talked about in a long time. And Lord knows.
Listen, it's confusing. I'm with him. Listen.
It's confusing.
I'll let trigger fish go too.
Okay, but let me tell you how to fix this. It is. I'm not saying
and
like
I shouldn't
know
have.
No, but I'm saying it is confusing as all get out. And it's been a while since I've talked about, and there may be other apps out there, but this is the one I use and I have some confidence in. And it's called Fish Rules.
Right. Right. And I was in the guff trying to get that
but
to
you
make
gotta,
sure.
Okay, but you got to do this before you leave. You got to let it update.
I know, but I didn't do it. And I got out there and I said, you know, I can't remember whether we can keep trigger fish or not.
Right.
And I said, I'm not going to take a chance. It's not worth it to me.
No, agreed.
I'm going to chunk them back overboard. And then when I got in and I saw that we could keep it, I said, I just get sick of this crap. I really do. I can't keep up with the seasons. I can't keep up with the limits. I can't keep up. I mean, it's just too much stuff to have.
It is, but you can sit there and say, and I agree with you, it is. But it's what the rule is right
it
now.
It is.
So if you're gonna operate within it. And so, and I got to be careful here, too, because just like we talked about the podcast, people could listen to this show at any point in the future, this and that. We're talking about what's going on right now. You can look at the date of the show. We were talking about triggerfish being open because I don't want somebody to say, well, Mike and Sean said triggerfish were open. They were open the opening weekend of snapper season in 2023.
That's right.
If you're listening to this sometime in the future, it is closed now in 2023.
We're June on into, the 1st.
Yes, yeah, so we're on into June now. It is closed. But this is the for me to get around just to offer an idea here. This app I think is really good. It's called Fish Rules.
It is good and I've got it.
So you go through this and you let it. You know, I'm always funny about letting it get locations on the apps, but you let it get your location because what it does then is it figures out where you are and what the law is. So if I would travel to, I don't know, we go to South Carolina or Florida or something like that, it's going to give me the update for where I am, what I can keep, what the length limits are. Obviously, for Alabama, where I am, it gives me the federal and the state.
Right.
You know, so it'll give me the federal, be the same for the Gulf here, and then the state rules as well. So it's good. Like, I mean, you know, it's always these questions that drive us crazy. Snapper's open, but is triggerfish open? Is amberjack open? You know, what is the...
Seeing in the past, amberjack have been open.
Right, but not open now.
Not this year, nope. But in the past...
Just because it was in the past doesn't mean...
That's right. In May, amberjack, you could catch amberjack and trigger and snapper, usually the first week of snapper season.
Mm-hmm.
This year, you couldn't catch any amberjack, but you could keep... You couldn't keep them, but you could keep triggerfish.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. You got to have this app.
Yeah.
And when the changes for limits and I mean, like if I just ask you ling wise right now, because I mean, Mike Ward, who's fished more in the Gulf, you know, than most people around here, what's the limit on ling?
Is it one, or is it two?
Okay, is it one? It is one per person.
One per person. Yes.
And how many for the boat?
Four.
Two.
Two.
So it's one of those weird things that has an individual and it has a boat limit.
Yeah.
The way I understand that, if I was by myself in the boat, the limit's one.
Yeah.
If there are two of us, the limit's two. If there are 15 of us, the limit's two.
Two. That's right. Yeah.
So
that's
it's
another
36,
one.
36 inches. I mean, big length,
yeah.
Fork length. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's why you got this stuff changes so much. Fish Rules is the name of the app. And there may be somebody, and I don't know if, Fishing Chaos, I'm going to have to reload that app. Got a new phone. Reload that app for the rodeo coming up, which, by the way, talk to those guys. Kickoff parties happened. Sharks are in.
We missed you there.
Yeah. Sharks are in. A bunch of other cool information there. But rodeo tickets go on sale next week. Yeah, next week. Father's Day. So that's going on. And so, Fishing Chaos is a good app. But this Fish Rules app, I just like it. Anywhere you travel, it'll update. And don't do what Mike did. Just before you go, if you open the app, just opening it, it'll get the newest information. So do it before you go offshore.
And then you can you pull it up offshore?
Yeah, once it's there, okay. Once it's updated, yeah, you can pull it.
Okay.
So I would just say, like, what I would do is just hit it on the way down, or, you know, if you and I go fishing tomorrow, which we are, I'll just hit this app today, and then I don't think there's going to be any big change by tomorrow that I know of from Saturday to Sunday, so it's good. I don't know. I mean, there's always – who knows? There's always a chance of things happening like that that I don't expect, but that's in the mix.
And so, we are going fishing tomorrow.
Yeah.
We don't get a chance to do that very often.
Not very often.
You know, you think we do, but we don't get a chance to go fishing very often.
We fish, but we fish separately. Once in a while, Mike has a charity, let me on his boat, and we're gonna do that, so we'll have a report on that. Interesting-wise, too, of course, I saw, you know, you scan Facebook, you hear from people. Yeah, nice snapper. I'm seeing a nice snapper. I don't know that, you know, I hadn't seen any great biggins. I know some were probably caught, but I saw, I mean, people weren't measuring fish, but that's the pictures people put on Facebook, too.
Sure, yeah. You know? They're not going to put the 2 and 3 pounders
right.
on there.
You know, because, I mean, it got to the point last year with me that there were a lot of measure that fish, and if they made better than 16, we kept them.
Put them in a box.
Right? Yeah. But seeing some pictures of some pretty decent fish out there this year, we'll talk more about that when we get back. And yeah, alligator season, whether you fish them or hunt them or whatever you do, that drawing is open. We'll talk about that and more when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Another thing, grouper. Different grouper species keep me confused, beyond confused.
That's right.
So, I mean, that's another reason that app is. Hey, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.
Can you keep a black grouper right now?
Black grouper. So let's go to the app.
Or gag grouper.
You can keep, and also you got to go through and look in these apps because there's different names, right? Like what we call things. And so. Black grouper, I know this because I cheated before. You can keep black grouper right now as of, and once again, because these shows in a podcast world, you know, are listened to, this is 2023 in June, okay? So,
right.
Yeah, because I don't want, well, Sean and Mike said.
And we're talking about today.
Yes, you can
just
keep.
Just today.
Right, you can keep black grouper right now. You can, just now, gag grouper has been closed.
So I think
last week it was still open. I'm not sure, but I think it was open.
It was because I caught one.
Okay, so gag is now closed. So it was open last week. It's now closed. Black grouper is open. Obviously, Goliath grouper you can't keep ever. And then there's, you know, they'll list on these a bunch of species that I've. Have you ever caught a misty grouper?
I have not.
You ever caught a Nassau grouper?
I have not.
Okay, neither have I. Red grouper.
I have not. No, yes, I have. I have caught a red grouper.
So it's open right now as of when we're talking. Check your app. And I mean, there's just no way because there's so much changes on regulation. Like the state couldn't publish anything. It has to be through an app because as soon as you put a publishing out, then it could be wrong by the next day. So it has to be done this way. Scamp, open.
Yeah.
Okay. Snow, the deep waters, I think I'll look through and make sure, but they always seem to be open. Snowy grouper are open. I've never caught a speckled hind grouper, but they're open.
Yeah.
Let's see. Warsaw, open. Yellow edge, open. Yeah, so, I mean, you go, there's so many. I mean, there's a bunch of different groupers out there. But it's like on Amberjack, too.
And again, mention the app.
Fish rules. Yeah, and I think it's available on for Apple folks and for Android folks. But it's like Amberjack, right? So Amberjack's closed, but Lesser Amberjack are open.
Yes.
But you have to be able to identify. And I'll tell you, it's got a lot more greater Amberjack than Lesser Amberjack in my life.
Not me.
Okay. I've been on some trips where we caught some lessers for sure.
Yeah.
But it's day in and day out over my lifetime, they've been graders.
Graders.
Yeah, graders are closed.
You caught lessers.
No, I've caught some lessers over time, but not as much. But they're open, but graders not. So that's why you got to run an app. All right. Yeah. So fish rules.
Make sure you turn it on before you go
fishing.
Yeah,
let it update. Let it update.
Because I didn't do that.
Yeah,
and got out there and didn't know what I could do.
So, yeah, all you do is just press it, open the app, and it goes, it doesn't make that noise, but it auto updates, and then you're good.
Noise.
Well, that's because you got an iPhone. I got an Android. All right, we said we'd talk some Gators here as the window now for getting in the Gator lottery. Actually, you can't say lottery in Alabama. The Gator chances to be drawn, whatever the heck it is. It was so silly in our state. It says here, so this press release came out from the state, said as of 8 a.m. on June 6th, the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources will begin accepting online applications for alligator harvest permits. The permits allow for the harvest of an alligator in one of Alabama's five designated Alabama management areas. During the dates listed below, there's no fee to apply for a permit. Now, that part is normal. The change that started, although anything would start arguments on Facebook, here's what happened. Well, it says a total of 260 alligator harvest permits will be distributed among the five AMAs. Individuals may submit one application per management area. The online application must be submitted by 8 a.m. on July 11th. So that's the deadline to get this in.
So it's different than what it used to be.
Why?
Because it used to $5 every time.
Yeah, but it's been off that for a while.
Okay.
That's been like 3 years of off that. Yeah, three or 4 years. So, and this is where you build the bonus points and all that. So we'll get into that. But, and you know, the Southwest zone and the coastal zone, those are ours down here. There's, you know, three other areas in the state.
That's right.
But those are the ones down here in our neighborhood. So it's only Alabama residents and Alabama lifetime license holders age 16 or older holding any valid all game or small game Alabama hunting license may apply for the permits. Alabama lifetime license holders may apply for an alligator harvest permit even if they've moved out of state.
Okay.
Hunters will be randomly selected by computer to receive one harvest permit each. Now, here's the thing that started the chatter. There is a $250 fee for the alligator harvest permit. So you don't
once you get it, get accepted,
right.
It costs $250.
Right.
Okay.
So so it's not for putting in. And remember, you can't, like, it changed way back in when you and I both got out of this is when it was opened, like, you could put in as many entries as you wanted for money.
Depending on how much money you want to spend.
And people would go spend thousands of dollars. I said, listen, the odds aren't, I don't need to kill an alligator that badly. Heck, all I do is guide people. I don't really care that I kill them. You know, I end up guiding people a lot. But I got out of putting in for the drawing. Then a few years ago, it changed now to where you get one entry per AMA, right?
Yes.
So I put in, I'll tell you, I already did mine. I put one in for Southwest and one in for Coastal. Even though there's other zones, I know I'm not going, I'm going to hunt here in my backyard where I know them.
But you can't put one in each zone.
You can. Yes, you can.
Okay.
And it doesn't cost you to do that. But if you're selected, well, then there's a $250 fee. For that permit, that harvest permit. It says if selected for two or more locations, hunters must choose. By the way, if you get selected for two or more locations, I don't like you anymore. Because there's guys like me that, you know.
You should have bet on the lottery.
That's right. If you get selected for
but
two.
But they don't have lotteries.
That's
so
right.
You can't
use the word lottery. Hunters must choose which location they want to hunt. A slot for locations not chosen will be filled in from a list of randomly selected alternates. Now, I've been an alternate before, just never, you know, get drawn. I think I was an alternate last year. Said random selection process utilizes a preference point system. Now, this is something we've gotten into in detail about this and also what I do for out west. Like when I get, you know, going to Colorado and
right.
I apply in Colorado, I apply in Arizona, I apply in Utah. Occasionally, New Mexico is just a straight draw. It's like a random lottery each year. You preference points. So that is part of what we do here. Applicants. You're in a random selection process utilizing a preference point system. The system increases the likelihood of repeat applicants being selected for a hunt as long as they continue to apply each year. If an applicant does not apply for a permit in a given year or is selected and accepts the permit for the hunt, the preference point status is forfeited. So, in other words, the more time, the way the odds go in a preference point system, the more years you go not getting drawn, the better chance you have in that next given year and the next of
right.
getting drawn. Doesn't guarantee it. I can guarantee you that, but it gives you a better chance. It says applicants can check their selection status on the link, and this is through Outdoor Alabama, after 8 a.m. on July 12th. So, you know, it's right now through July 12th or July 11th to put in, and then the lucky winners will know as of the 12th. In the past, I get an email telling me I didn't get selected, so you probably get one that says – you are selected. And then after that date, it says you confirm your acceptance online by 8 a.m. on July 19th or earlier. After that date, alternates will be notified to fill in any of the vacancies. Applicants drawn for the hunt are required to complete an online alligator training course prior to accepting their hunter alternate status. The course will be available on the applicant status page upon login. So for like last year, I was an alternate. I still had to take, if I wanted to accept the alternate designation, I had to take the course. It's an online thing. It's like you'll pass it. It's all right. It's,
yeah. But if you does that, you have to do that every year. Let's say you don't get drawn again, but you know you're an alternate. Do you have to do?
I think back? I probably do. I think it's probably it's a click, every click, year, click. I'm just guessing, deal. But yeah. I think it probably is. Even though I've taken the course in the past, I probably have taken. It's not. I mean, it's 15, 20 minutes of your time. It's not the end of the world. Yeah. You watch a little video. It's like, hey, here's somebody trying to catch an alligator. Are they doing this right? Are they doing it wrong? I mean, it's, you know, you're like, okay, yeah, that. It's kind of like that. So, and the breakdown of the permit designation or allocation. So we talked about the five different AMAs here. The biggest one and the longest standing one, Southwest, you know, Southwest Alabama, 100 permits for the Southwest zone. And then that area that, you know, we were hunting last year when I was guiding those guys last year, that was the coastal zone, which is south of I-10.
Yes.
50 for that area. So it like it's a, you know, so right now 150 of the total are between Mobile Baldwin County areas.
And how many total is it?
There are, what was it, 260, I think, something like that.
Man.
Let's see, that top number was, 260. So there's 260 total for the state of Alabama.
And 150 here, basically in Mobile and Baldwin County.
Yeah, so a Southwest management area is private and public waters in Baldwin and Mobile County, north of I-10, and private and public waters in Washington, Clark, and Monroe counties, east of 43 and south of 84. And then the coastal zone is, the south. It's private and public waters in Baldwin and Mobile counties, south of I-10. And the dates here on this, it's, you know, these, there's a mix here, but ours in the southwest, I think it's the same. Let me make sure. In southwest and coastal. Yeah, it is. It starts on August 10th, sunset on August 10th, through sunrise on August 13th. And then sunset August 17th until sunrise on August 20th. And same thing for the coastal zone. Now, some of the other areas, like the southeast management area, is like the 12th of August starting. And then west central is August 10th through 13th. And then the Eufaula area, I think, is the 18th through October 2nd. And there. So there's a, but that's out. So you go and it's time to put in for the, we can't say lottery, but the alligator lottery. In the state of Alabama, and, get yourself in there if you want to go hunt slash fish a gator.
So I wonder what the kill ratio is. If 100, they give 100 permits for the Delta, how many alligators do they average killing per year out of the Delta?
We'll try to get Chris
out of 100.
Yeah, we'll try to get Chris Nix on from the state who always has those numbers. I can tell you this: in asking that question in the past, it's not 100% at all.
Just from what
60%, and I'm probably stepping on myself here, but I think it's 60.
It wasn't that many.
No, I think it's more than half, but it's not any kind of 100% or 90%.
I guess they only show the big ones. They don't show the little.
That is correct.
High foot ones.
That's correct. Just like nobody's putting Facebook pictures up of 16-inch snapper.
Sounds reasonable to me.
There you go. All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And so a little update there on gator hunting season for 2023. Good luck to y'all, unless you're in line in front of me, and then I hope you don't get drunk. Actually, I mean, it is funny. I say this, and it's true. It's one of those things that killing a gator is just not like you. We've talked about this. I will get in it because it's a good use of the resource. It could be fun. But I'm immediately, if I get drawn, thinking about who I would take. You know, I end up guiding people more than anything. And that's fine because it's going and finding a gator. Like the killing a gator, it's like I lay in bed and worry about turkeys and deer and ducks and quail. I don't lay in bed and worry about going to get it. It just doesn't. No, it's fun, but it's a thing to do. It's a thing to do. It's good use of the resource.
And you have a license to do it, then that would probably fire you up. But right now, you don't have an opportunity or a chance to go, so
right.
you don't think about it.
No, that's true.
But if you got the license in your hand, you say, I need to get out and really go find me a big one now.
And I do get fired up when somebody gets drawn and contacts me and says they want me to guide them. Then I get engaged.
Yeah.
Right? Because my fun in it is going to find that gator that we're going to go after. The hooking it and shooting it, I mean, it's like anybody can do it. I mean, it doesn't, like anybody on the boat can do that, has a hunting license, can do it. You know,
right.
It's just a permit holder, it belongs to them with a CITES tag on it. But yeah, it's the fun of going to find it.
I can see how that would be fun.
Yeah, so we'll do it. And,
you know, I used to put in for the draw too. Mm-hmm. Me and you both did, you know.
For the longest time, early on when it opened. But then it got to a point where
I just said, well, I'm done. I'm just not going to do it anymore. And I think a lot of people felt that way.
Right. Well, it was, because people would come in and just flood it with entrance, you know, and buy their way into
it. That was when they were buying it too. Yeah. It was $5 per chance.
Yeah, and
or
they
whatever.
Would buy 1,000 chances or something like that. And, you know, I was good for five.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were
and
spending
$5,000.
I was spending 25 bucks, you know. So
right. It
is different now. It's one entry per, and it costs you nothing until if you get drawn, the permit costs you $250.
Yeah.
So, and
that's a good deal.
I had a lot of people upset on Facebook, but so does everything.
Yeah.
Also, as we kind of, I know, you know, it's fishing season. We're going to talk some more fishing here in a second. But it's always, if you're land manager and you're worried about hunting season, there's a lot of work to do off season. I would say this, if you can avoid, even though I'm about to say something contrary, if you can avoid running your rotary mowers, you know, Bush Hogs, but as I always correct, Bush Hogs are brand. And,
yeah.
You know, but you're, if
you're
if
Bush
you can,
Hog.
If you can avoid mowing right now, avoid mowing.
Yes.
There's lots of little everythings out there.
Yep.
But, you know, turkey poults that we're working so hard on and quail chicks, you know, and coming not too far off, you know, 40, 50 days, we're talking about fawns.
That's right.
In the mix. So it's tough because I get it. You know, you want to like, man, if I can get this mowed and knocked down, but time to kind of just stay off the mower. The flip side of that is you need to be planting your dove field. So maybe you're lucky enough to have an area that had been mowed before or whatever. If you're planting, let's talk about the brown top millet, right? That's pretty much the easiest and go-to for dove fields out there. Brown tops are probably, you know, you look at it, it depends on sun and rain and all that, but 40 days it can mature.
Right.
But 40 days means matured, but it's still green. And that's the thing you got to remember, because a lot of people look at, okay, what's the maturity date of, you can say that for sorghum,
still gotta dry
corn,
out.
Millet, you know, you could... Yes, there's a maturity date, but it's still got to dry out.
Yeah.
So you want to back time, and I would argue too that May, if I had any confidence that there were more than seven dove on our place ever, I would start. It's a bad, sore subject, y'all. But I would back up my plant, and I did for a while into beginning of May, because it let me do two things. It let me make sure not only was it mature and dried out, went brown. It let me then mow before season the millet I grew there to start the feeding pattern. You know what I'm saying? You don't mow the whole thing, but you mow a row, you mow two rows, and then by season, you got the doves coming in there, and you can put more down. You know, you could mow more down to make it available. So you got to think about that. If you're looking here in mid-June, right? So season I hadn't even pulled. I can pull this during the break, but I'm sure we're looking at Labor Day weekend, probably for the North Zone.
Yep.
You know, right after the...
A week after that.
Yeah, for the South Zone.
South Zone. Yeah.
I didn't look at the
Give
thing.
Give or take a little bit, right in there, yeah.
So, okay. So that's 30 days in August, 30 days in July. That's 60 days.
Yeah.
So if you have something that needs 40 days, and brown top's the fast one.
Yes.
I mean, the other millets, you're looking at like a, you know, a white pearl millet or a proso, or they take longer. You got to have that done and in the ground, let alone... 90-day maturity, corn and sunflowers and sorghums, you know, milos, things like that. You got to have more. So you're really you're kind of getting into the, it's probably brown top for you now if you haven't gotten it in, you know, or you can say that's to have it ready for opening weekend. Now, if you don't care, if you say, we really don't, we do a Labor Day thing, we go fishing, I don't even care about doves till mid-September or on into October, then that's fine.
No problem. You can,
yeah.
That's right.
But, yeah, it's always like the wake-up call.
If you want to open a weekend, you better do it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Brings us to the next thing. And that's, you know, and Mike and I had a great discussion during a news break on it. For me, it's getting towards where I'm thinking chufa. Yeah. So I am a end of...
You're lucky that you're able to even think about chufa.
True.
Because most people can't even think about planting chufa.
We did end up having hogs come in and mess up some chufa once it was mature last year.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm lucky that the hogs are, you know, they come through, but they don't set up residence. Just kind of the nature. Yeah. But the one thing that helps us is there's just not a lot of great habitat for them. You know, it's, Mike knows. I mean, it's longleaf pines that are burned. You know, there's just not a lot of hog zones in there. And then we don't have a lot of hardwoods. We have very little hardwoods on the property.
But you have water.
We have water, but we don't have water in like a sloppy, wet, you know, we have running water.
Right.
We have running water. Very little swamp.
The hogs have learned to live in environments that they did not used to live in.
Sure, but
they have spread out so much now that they live in pine plantations that 30, 40, 50 years ago, they didn't live in pine plantations. They live in pine plantations.
But here's the thing. What do critters need to live? Food. I mean, they need shelter, but they need food.
Yeah. So hog will eat anything.
They will, but when there's certain foods that are available, they're not big browsers.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
The rooters. So what comes on, and one of the reasons we burn our forest the way we do, setback succession, poult habitat, quail habitat, those kind of things, it also brings on God's groceries, like the forbs and grasses that grow after those fires, wherever the Kogan doesn't dominate. It feeds a lot of critters, but it is a browse, nip, not normal to a hog's feeding. It doesn't mean that they can't find some food source they can utilize. And like I said, chufas is one of them. They came in, but they came in late and destroyed it. You know, one of the best things you can ever have for getting your chufas up is people around you that are feeding corn 365, and they'll keep the hogs off you. I'll pay my neighbors to buy y'all some corn to keep them over there. So chufa-wise, you're looking at now. And like you talked about, people you know plant in May.
Most of the time in May.
So May, June, July, something I did last year, you know, a suggestion one of my neighbors out there. He was planting some in August. I did some in August, did okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's 120 day, I think it is. I don't have my notes in front of me, but it's I think I remember chufa is 120 for maturity, for the tuber maturity, you know, what's going on under the ground. So you got to back that up too. Even though you and I talked about it, even with the August planting, what I saw is I did get a chufa crop, and we didn't get we're in Mobile County. We don't get a frost, you know, that's going to kill it. But you start, you know, in September and definitely October, you start noticing the days are so much shorter that you just get less
sunlight.
You get less sunlight. The plant's got less sunlight to work with. It slows down production, so it can slow that whole thing down. If you're going to go chufa, you need to be thinking about that right now as well. If you hadn't already gotten it done, it's and there's different levels. If you've had, I'll say how much input cost there is. I mean, it depends on how you want to do it. If you want to make, and some of y'all have chufa fields that should be on the covers of magazines. They're beautiful. Depending on where you are, it takes a couple applications of herbicide, you know, to kill out broadleaves in them. And if some people come in with the pre-emergent even and do that. If you can take kind of dealing with some ugly chufas, which I'll have sometimes, then you don't have to use as much. But chufas by the tuber, by the seed, are expensive.
Very expensive.
And, you know, and you're doing yourself a disservice if you do that and don't come in. I mean, do a soil test as always, but chufas need fertilizer. You can make a big difference in chufa production, what's underneath there in fertilizer. I mean, I'm here to tell you, field to field, you can see that difference.
It's that way with everything.
But chufa, really. But chufas, it seems like it's just, they need, you know, because most of what a plant does is based on the sun, their energy production.
Yeah.
You know, we always think fertilizer. Fertilizer helps in things, but some plants, maybe it's just more of the peanut family, which I think chufas are in and all that, that takes more fertilizer.
Yeah.
Does it? But obviously, you need a soil test to know what you're doing. But yeah, coming in with chufa. And another thing I do too to try to stretch money on this is chufa fields. And a lot of people rotate chufa fields because you'll get some endemic disease in chufa if you do it year after year after year. So it's good to leave that field and then go to another field and then come back to that field 2 years later. But I've been lucky enough to not have that issue. I'll come through, and really now, I should be doing that this afternoon. I'll come through fields that have chufas, and I disc them. And I disc them. Yes. Yeah. And what you're doing is
spreading them out.
Because the turkeys didn't get all of them.
Right.
So you disc them. Then sometimes after I disc, I'll look in there and say, do I feel like there's enough density? You know, you just pick, you know, get your hands dirty. Go look. And if you feel good about it, the number of chufa seeds, then that's fine. If there's just not enough, you may come in and supplement on top of what's already there with a chufa bag. You know, walk and sling them. And then go ahead and fertilize and cover them up.
Yeah.
And as much as I live in the world of throw and mow and talk in cool season plantings that
you don't, chufas.
You know, in the cool season plantings, I'm always like, you don't have to bury that stuff so deep. Chufa, I go ahead and bury it.
You need to loosen the saw.
Yep,
thing.
And let that disc eat. It is the opposite of the winter plantings for sure on that. All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all along. And reminder here that Gator won't use the lottery word. The chance to win. Now the drawing is open now through July 11th, I think. And go through the links there at OutdoorAlabama.com and get signed up. Also, you know, we're talking about planting. You know, we're talking dove fields and chufa, and you and I both had this conversation. It is like. Because I'm guilty. I'm not preaching to anybody. I'm a sinner and had been for a long time. You know, if something tells you, like, a plant X amount of pounds of seed to the acre, I tell you another good one we didn't even talk about during the break is sorghum milo. It's one because I plant that for quail cover and different things. You're like, yeah, well, I'll just double it.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Just don't do that. Because you're gonna be disappointed. I get it. I am you.
I have always done that for wheat and oats now.
Right.
If it says this, let me
do some more.
Yeah.
And there's part of it too that you do factor in seeds that fail. You factor in seeds that get eaten by birds before they grow.
Yep.
Right. And so you really don't get punished.
You have to factor in like I'm at. Hogs.
Yeah, how much
you would not believe
how much
the
seed?
Hogs
oh, yeah.
will come and root up for a seed, for a wheat seed.
By the way,
unbelievable.
And then we could come right back to the wheat seed, but we talked about chufa before, and you're talking about the hogs getting them. You know, but then you said, yeah, turkeys get them. Listen, my turkeys have gotten so bad that I think they hear the crinkle of that white bag of turkey gold chufa.
Yeah.
And I look at them, I'm like, you fools, you're eating that chufa seed would have made about 50, but you know, so I have to factor
in. I'm worried about later on.
And crows.
Yeah.
Crows hit my chufa fields big time when I plant. Crows and turkeys. Yeah. Like last year, I said, if I could get that bird netting like I put over my blueberry plants and tomatoes, if I could cover my whole field with those, I'd be a lot better off. You don't talk about that mesh netting.
I do. Yeah.
But yeah, that's part of it. But yeah, so you said, you know, you're factoring in on wheat seed and all that. Well, even if you end up having too much of that, you don't have a big – I don't see a noticeable decrease in the production. But when you start looking at bigger seeded things, and you pointed out, I mean, during the break, just think about pine trees.
Yes.
You know, if they say, you know, 600 pine trees to an acre, and you go, well, we're going to do 1,200. We're going to do 5,000.
Yeah.
It's not better.
No, it's not better.
So the same thing on chufa. I know these for a fact. I know corn. I know chufa. I know sorghum, milo. Doubling your amount is now you. If perfectly the birds came and took half of it away, it's one thing. But if you end up with that much, you'll get production, but a bunch of small plants.
Yeah, I did that with turnips one time. I planted so many turnips one year. I think I bought, I believe it was 1,200 pounds. 1,200 pounds.
Y'all know how small a turnip seed is.
Of turnips.
You bought half the turnips on planted earth.
I had about 80 acres of fields that I was planting, but probably about a third of that or less would have worked just fine.
Right.
But I in some places, I planted so many turnips. The turnips came up really good, but they only got about maybe 8 inches tall, 6 inches tall. There's just so many of them in there.
Right, and they're all fighting for the same sun and the same nutrients everything. In the soil.
And they just didn't plant, but some of them did. Whew, some of them planted, did really good. But anyway, you can plant too much of anything, I guess.
Yeah, very much so. Also, yeah. Something we need to visit here. I mean, we talked about some offshore fishing, and you had a good trip, caught some good fish.
Yep, and we're going to have a good trip tomorrow.
Yep, we'll catch some.
Yeah, we had a good trip. A little hard to catch our limit. Harder than I thought it was.
Was
going
it
to
as
be.
Hard as last year?
I would say yeah.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah,
last
we year caught was hard some for... good fish. Now don't right. get me. We got some. What we caught were big quality fish. You know, 15.5 to 20 pounds.
Yeah, great
but,
fish.
And we caught. I could have caught a boatload of a pound and a half to. Maybe 3 pounders,
okay.
You know, but yeah. That wasn't what we were trying to target. I always, if you're going to go out 40, 50 miles offshore right. trying to catch a snapper, I don't want to come back with 2 pounders, yeah. 3 pounders.
You can do that close with me.
Yeah. And now if I'm going out 10 miles, yeah no problem. Let's just keep everything we catch as legal and throw it in a box, and I don't care. And honestly, I'd rather have those fish than I had the big ones.
Yes. But people eat, who don't go, they eat better, they're easier to clean.
Yeah.
But if people don't go all the time, they want to try to get the most
That's
snapper
right.
meat.
And it's more fun catching the big ones.
They
now.
Are fun.
Now, it
Agreed.
Is. And we lost several. I mean, really good ones, you know. I say really good. We just lost some good fish.
One of those freight trains where you never do stop the fish. You're like, I mean, can't stop the fish.
Yeah. Now, it could have been something other than snapper, maybe. But, I mean, it wasn't just one or two. And we probably 10 or more really good ones. So, So, anyway, we had a good trip. Caught some scamp, caught some grouper. And so, we had a good trip. Caught some.
See, here we go.
You
catch some beeliners, Mike?
I did catch some beeliners, but also caught some triggerfish that I didn't bring home.
Because you didn't refresh your fish rules
that's
app.
That's right. But actually, we caught a fair amount of beeliners, but then we started losing these fish, and I ran out of live bait. I had live bait, but they were little bitty pinfish.
Right.
So I started cutting up the beeliners.
Right.
Butterflying them.
Right.
And I lost probably about 10 or 12 of those trying to catch big, you know, snapper and grouper and that kind of stuff. So when we go back out tomorrow, we're going to have some bigger fish before we go.
Some big live bait?
Something, yes. Got to have.
When you were out there, you said the sargassum was good. Did you see any kind of anything under it, any kind of
you
dolphin?
You know, we didn't stop to look.
Okay.
When we went out of Orange Beach.
Okay.
So where I was going fishing was 60 miles offshore.
Right.
You know, to
you didn't
the southwest.
Have time yet,
So I just didn't waste the time of stopping and looking at the grass, see if there's any ling under it or whatever. So I don't know.
Okay.
But there was lots and lots of grass out there. And everybody's been complaining about the grass.
Right.
Big time.
We won't complain if it all, and maybe with it, you know, laying out some here the next couple of days, it'll group up and be in some big mats. And
well, some of it does, but not all of it.
Yeah,
they. I don't care what happens. You always have scattered grass out there.
Sure.
You know, it's fine if you're going and dropping for a snapper or something.
Yeah,
but if you're
trying
to troll, Now, if
you're
trying to troll for, let's say, kings or wahoo or billfish or whatever, it gets to be serious.
No.
As much grass is out there right now.
This is that big
bad.
Year. Well,
yeah.
Well, hopefully, we'll find some dolphin or some ling around that grass coming up tomorrow. And we'll do this show all again next week. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. You can check out the show throughout the weekend and, of course, in podcast form, posting up later today. Thanks.